AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. A great book has come out this year, The Dylan Tapes, Friends, Players, and Lovers Talking Early Bob Dylan. Anthony Scaduto is edited by Stephanie Trudeau. Anthony Scaduto was journalist, biographer of rock musicians who wrote under the name Tony Sciacca. Along with his landmark Bob Dylan intimate biography, he also wrote biographies about Jagger, Sinatra, Marilyn Monroe, and JFK. That's a nice list. The celebrated actress and singer and writer Stephanie Trudeau met Anthony in 1972 and was his wife until research assistant from 1978 until his passing away. And she has put out this book, which is a fantastic book. Stephanie is kind enough to join us today to talk about it. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on this this book, because I think it's important on multiple different levels. And I'm going to get to Dylan here in a second, because obviously we're talking about one of the icons of all time music, and a look into him, which is something that's truly unique. But I want to start off with what is truly a great element of this book. Today, I think there were more back in the 70s, 60s and 70s, people would write better about music overall and biographies. I think they had a better grasp of that. Today, most music reporting is plain garbage, and I'll be the first to say it. I think that it is. I just don't, because, you know, there's a tendency of not getting into the weeds and really going in and digging in deep with a musician. What Anthony had done here with these tapes, once you find out, is he went deep into Dylan, and it gives us what is truly a master's class in, as a writer, capturing a subject.
Yes. It's a master class in the art of the interview, for sure. And I think a master class for journalism, because a big part of journalism is, of course, the interview. So whether you're print or even, you know, television or radio interviewing, media interviewing. The point is, how do you do the research to find out about your subject, obviously. Ask those questions, dig deep, really deep, to get those answers. And in that process, you know, you are creating this picture of a human being and or an artist, or, you know, what they're about. So it's the art of the interview from the journalist point of view.
The musicians are an interesting bunch. I mean, if you ever interview actors love talking. They love talking. They'll talk all day long. Musicians, on the other hand, I've met a few that are really great chatters, but for the most part, there's almost a reluctance to talk about things. Mm-hmm. And that's even still today. Dylan is not someone who has sat down with a lot of interviews over his entire career. Talk first of all about how Anthony got this to go forward, this interview to begin with, back in when he started it.
Right. Well, let me just start by saying that these interviews, these taped interviews, the Dylan tapes, as we call them, they're raw archival material. They're primary sources, and they are, in a sense, Tony Scaduto's basement tapes. I say that because we found them in the basement of our house. How he got Dylan to sit down and talk is again this masterly journalistic approach. He did all the research. He talked to everybody and anybody in Dylan's sphere who would talk to him. There were always, of course, people who would not. But, you know, he got a lot of people to open up, because I think people want to tell you about their experience, their relationship with somebody as magnificent as Bob Dylan. And then after he has spoken to all of these people, he kept trying to reach Dylan and kept reaching out to him. It kind of got back to Dylan what was going on, who had talked to Tony about him. And then the funny thing is, someone said, you know, he's writing this expose, which Tony wasn't writing an expose. I mean, it was but
on
that
Dylan.
Got to Dylan. That got to him. So he called Tony on a Sunday morning and said, why are you writing an expose about me? I ain't never done nothing to be exposed about. I think I pretty much quoted him exactly. And then Tony said, just sit down and talk to me. So Dylan, they went back and forth. Dylan had to see the manuscript. Tony finally said, yes, you can see the manuscript. You can make factual corrections. You can talk to me about stuff that you might feel, you know, and if I agree with you, I'll take it out, but factual. So Dylan looked at the manuscript, got back to Tony, and sat down for a long interview with him because he liked what Tony had written. And actually, I'll quote him. You wrote a good book, and I want to help you make it better. Mm-hmm. You know, some of it is pretty straight, and some of it is very straight. Some of it is exactly the way it happened. So it struck a chord with Bob Dylan, and he agreed to the interview.
Dylan pretty much was well established at this point. One of the things I found that's interesting about that interchange you just expressed is it's the best writers know where to give some leeway. Sure, I'll let you right. correct factual things here. But the reality is Anthony didn't back down saying, I'm going to write the book I'm going to write. I'll let you have mm-hmm. factual reviewing ability, but I'm going to write it as I interpret it because this is – and by the way, this is why great writers exist. Great writers mm-hmm. give you their impression of what they're seeing. You learn to like the writer, and then you accept their interpretation. And that is why this is such a pure book as opposed to modern-day loved it, hated it crud. This right. is – you get to know the writer – and let the writer tell the story. And how do you feel he was able to convince Dylan with that? You know, was it just one of those things where there was a trust that was immediately built up?
Well, I don't think it was an immediate trust, no, because they had a bit of back and forth phone interview and meeting. And so I think the thing is that Dylan was smart enough to realize, number one, this was not some silly fanzine, that this was a serious journalistic approach, and that kind of has to appeal to your ego a bit. It's quite complimentary. I mean, what Tony was doing was saying, this is a serious subject. Because before that, no one thought pop figures or rock and roll or any of that was serious enough to really write in a serious way. And Tony, you know, he was a trailblazer. He kind of like broke out of the whole fanzine mold and wrote the first serious journalistic approach to a pop figure. And at the, even though Dylan was very famous, now he's, of course, a Nobel laureate. But at the time, he was still pretty much a pop figure. You know, not an important writer, although, yes, he was. But no one said that at that time. So I think that some of this was you know, that Dylan recognized that this was serious and this was very... Not so much flattering, but it was important for Dylan's career. And Dylan was always about his career. You know, he was. Make no bones about that. Yeah.
Most successful people, that's one thing that's underrated, is that they are very they're very driven. And so when he did sort of settle in on this, was he a fan of Dylan? What about Dylan did he say, you know what, I got to go get him?
Well, I think he definitely was a fan of Dylan. He really, you know, because I think from a writer's point of view, he saw the writing skill, you know, he did see the poetry and he did see the fact that this was another writer in a way. And, you know, writers love writers for the most part.
Yeah.
He had done a fanzine quick paperback book on the Beatles that was selling fairly well. You know, it was an okay thing. And a hardcover publisher came to Tony and said, gosh, I'd love you to write a hardcover book. I think it's time for something serious about a rock figure or a pop music figure. And the editor suggested Edgar Winter. And Tony said, oh, no, are you kidding me? No, the only person that's even worth writing about is Bob Dylan. And, you know, I think Tony felt, you're going to put all the time and effort and writing a book is life consuming. You're going to do that, then it better be somebody that you feel is really worth it and that you care about, because you're going to live with that person for a year or 2 years. Mm-hmm. So that's, yes, he chose Dylan.
Another thing that Anthony did here, which, you know, and once again, as you said, you're sitting there, you know that Dylan's a great writer. You just don't, it's not accepted at the level he's at back in the late 60s, early 70s. Even right. We now know that. Anthony did one thing that was incredibly smart, and whether it was by intent or it was just you know, because the way he checked off boxes by recording these, he has made something which is truly, I mean, these are, you know, national treasures. These tapes are a national treasure now, and I mean, I feel
that way too.
well, they are, and the question is, did he realize it at the time when he said, "I got Dylan, I'm taping him because in 30, 40 years, this is going to be must listen to stuff. Or was it one of those things where he was doing his journalism due diligence, which he said, I'm going to have a tape here so I can always go back and just listen to it. And it just, the fact that those tapes still exist was kind of an afterthought.
Well, the tapes existing was truly an afterthought. I'll start with first. Why tape? He taped them because, and he always said to an interview subject, and it's on all the tapes. I'm taping this because then we have accuracy. And if you ever have a question about this, we can go back. If there's something that's really wrong, fine. But it's for accuracy. And it's really for the subject, and he would say to the subject, this is for your benefit as much as mine as the writer. This is to make sure I really do get you the way it's being said. I get you right. Now, as an afterthought, all right, when he found these tapes, he found the tapes about a year before he died. So this was, Tony died in 2017, so, around 2015, 16. And he even said, I have no idea why he was rummaging around in the basement and why he came across this box, but he did, and he came upstairs and he said, oh my God, I found all my interview tapes. It's like 36 hours of interview tapes on reel to reel. We're talking old time technology. So here we have them, and it's a miracle that we have them, and it's a miracle that they were in good shape. I had them digitized, so I've got the digitized copies as well. And then later on, as I was deep into the weeds of doing this book, I found another box in the basement that when Tony did these tapes, he then transcribed them roughly himself, more like notes, and then also did impressionistic notes on the interview. So it's like triple backup of the interview. I mean, it's kind of fantastic, and it really made doing this book doable because I was doing it on my own, trying to channel him, but doing it on my own. So yes, I think that these tapes and the notes and the archival material that I have amassed, his manuscript, this really is a treasure. This should be like in the Smithsonian because Dylan is a Nobel laureate figure.
The tapes should definitely be in the Smithsonian. The tapes should definitely be in the Smithsonian. I'll agree with this. But what you just described as the process that Tony Scaduto went through, I wish writers would work like that because, once again, what has he actually done? Not only does he have Bob Dylan an intimate biography at the end of this, a fantastic book on the look at Mr. Dylan at that point, but because he was so thorough, because he was so good at what he did, he basically, with an easy layup, created another book with this other book that was created because he just did it right. And I think, and I know we'll get to Dylan here. I'm going to get to Dylan, but I am that I think is one of the important elements of this book is that if you are someone who wants to be a writer and writer of music, learning what Anthony Scaduto did and realizing that's the template you want to use, that's how you create great writers. And I think that that is why this is so important because, like you said, by doing the process correctly, look at the treasure trove of information that we now have for historical sake.
Right. And also, if you look at the two books together, and that's a very good point that you made, Matt, you look at the raw material, the tape, and you see the process of the interview, and you see how one just doggedly stays at it and often does get the information you're looking for or hoping to get. Sometimes you don't. With Susie Rodolo, it was really impossible. But, the interview with Joan Baez is, amazing, and it goes on and on and on. Then you look at Tony's book, An Intimate Biography of Bob Dylan, and you see how he took that raw material and crafted this amazing narrative line that not only is the story of Bob Dylan, but it's what I always felt was magnificent about the book. It's the story of an era, of a time, and he captured it brilliantly. And it's my time and era. And Tony was 16 years older than me, so I was just flabbergasted that he really caught it and got it. And so to see the two together, they're companions, and wonderful for a writer, yes, for any budding writer to look at.
Stephanie Trudeau joining us right now, the editor of The Dylan Tapes, Friends, Players, and Lovers Talking, early Bob Dylan, Anthony Scaduto as well, and very much involved in this. I want to get just your impression. So he comes upstairs. I've got a box of tapes. You find a reel-to-reel. He plugs them on. As you started listening to them, talk about what you experienced by hearing this raw interview footage.
Well, I really started listening to them after they had been digitized, after, you know, I was going to do the book, and I was in the process of doing the book. So the first eerie thing is listening to my deceased husband's voice. And then secondly, hearing all the voices, and I say, you know, that the voices jump off the tape and jump at you, and it's true. You get the urgency, you get the sense of, I have to say, and I have to tell you this because it's so important. It was important 10 years ago. It's so important still. That's kind of wonderful. It's oral history, and it's great storytelling. So all of this stuff is going on, and from an actor's point of view, boy, this is my stuff. I love this. I live and die for this kind of material. So that's what was going on for me. Hearing the immediacy of these voices, not just Tony's, but hearing Joan Baez, hearing Bob Dylan, hearing Echo Hellstrom, and what a wonderful character. So, yeah.
Well, and that's one of the things that's about this too is it's not, you know, obviously the amount of people that were interviewed here, especially, and once again, back to due diligence of Tony and doing his work right, not just focusing on the albums of the 60s, but going back and finding out the whole story, taking the time to go find Echo, finding the guys in Dinkytown where my son is right now over at the University of Minnesota, you know, it's still as counterculture as it ever was, you know, the idea of going out there and getting the full story, because it does, I imagine, as you listen through it, it just painted that full picture once again for you.
Right. And as I was saying, the fact that he wanted to get this big picture of what was going on at that time, to go and talk to, what was his name, David, the guy who was in charge of the SDS, you know, so he got the political stuff, he got Izzy Young, you know, so he gets the whole, like, you know, what was going on in the village at that time. You know, speaking to Dave Van Ronk and Dave's wife, Terry Saul Van Ronk, you know, so getting all of those people, it's the big picture. And it's how he was able to craft this amazing narrative line that gave you the story and the story in its context. That's what a good writer does. Gives you the context as well as the immediate story,
and conveys the conversation too. And I think because that's where you can ask someone about what their influences are, but it's a different thing to find about, you know, oh, that, you know, to have the full story and hear it out about, oh yeah, I introduced him to blues. I introduced him to folk. You know, he was introduced here. You know, he started experimenting with music here. To get it in that level, especially in those early days, is, I think, important, because it does give you, it's the difference between a conversation and an interview. And what you've got here really is conversations. And so you, what you get is a much better understanding of the full picture of the individual.
Right. Because you get, it's one thing for someone to just say, oh yes, it was an important time in my life. But when they flesh it out and you hear the story about, oh, you know, having a picnic and rolling on the ground and laughing, then you really have the context. You have the bigger picture. You kind of then really can understand it. It's then you have the theater and the drama. So it's
You brought up Echo Hellstrom. One of the stories there when he was getting booed when he was younger. You know, I thought that was, because it is. I mean, let's face it. Bob Dylan is like every other musician. You start off, you don't have every gig is not a great gig, and you know, she talks about some of his early stuff and some of the early gigs he was playing, and you know, it is just so funny in the same sense. It's like I watched American Bandstand after Sgt. Pepper came on out and they all bombed it. And they all thought it was horrible. It's like, really? You guys want to revisit that one at some point? It is kind of funny how, musicians, all of them, they come up and it takes a long time for them to get traction. But when they do, it's like no one can remember not loving them. You know what I mean?
Exactly. But I mean, you've got to make your mistakes and you have to hopefully learn from your mistakes and say, ooh, I could add that, and all of that. That only happens by doing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen by sitting in your bedroom and thinking about, well, how I'll become a great singer. You have to sing to become a great singer. So, and write songs, some of them terrible, some of them, to be able to be a great songwriter. So, I love that he was oblivious. He was just, again, so disciplined and directed. And just going to do his thing. And Echo was the one who was like, oh, I was so embarrassed. And they booed and
But once again, you get back to that, what you said. He was a driven guy. He had his agenda. Mm-hmm. He knew what he was doing. And he was discovering himself. And eventually what he came up with was an American treasure. Last thing here, and I want to get back to what we first talked about, is what I really would love for you to do is, if anyone's out there right now and you're thinking about it, I would love to cover the music scene. I would love to talk about music. I'd love to interview other actors, actresses, politicians. I want to really impress on people to get this book because this is a real how to do it, which is lost. I don't even think journalist schools teach this anymore. And I think that's the important element of this book. And I'll let you, finish out on that, because I think, as we said, this book is a bit of a master's class.
Yes. Yes. Well, Tony was a solid journalist. I mean, truly. He started out, and I talk about that in the foreword of the book where I, kind of introduce him and talk about what his background was. I mean, he wanted to be an architect. A family friend said, no, I'll get you a job at the New York Post. You'll make money. He started out 18 years old as a copy boy and just went up the ropes and obviously had the goods, because, it's one thing to be getting a job, but if you don't have the goods and you can't deliver, you're not going to go very far. He had the goods and people recognized it. Pete Hamill recognized it. Nora Ephron recognized it. And he also had the luck of working at a New York City newspaper at a time when journalism was really hot and fabulous, and there were great writers to learn from, to mentor you, etc. So he was a solid journalist. This wasn't his first rodeo. He had written a couple of books before, although this was his first really serious journalistic endeavor as a book writer. I think that, yes, if you are at all interested in writing, certainly you have to just read lots of books. Mm-hmm. But if you're interested in journalism, this is really a great way. Start with the Dylan tapes, because you see the interview process, and then read the biography to
Indeed.
See how he turned it into a book.
Indeed.
He turned it into
absolutely. Yeah. The Dylan tapes, Friends, Players, and Lovers, Talking Early Bob Dylan, Anthony Scaduto, Stephanie Trudeau. Stephanie, congratulations on this. All my best. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the time today.
Oh, you're very welcome. And it makes a great Christmas gift.
It does make it very fine. It makes it. If you know someone who loves music, just get them the book. I don't care if it's birthday, Christmas, get them the book. They're going to want this, or a writer. Stephanie, thank you very much. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.